Welcome to the Freedom Formula for Physicians podcast, where it's all about slashing your debt, slashing your taxes, and creating a liberated lifestyle. And now, your host, who has a vast collection of vintage DC and Marvel comic books, and ironically lives in Minnesota, where his favorite NBA team, the LA Lakers, originated, Dave Denniston.
Hello, my friends. This is Dave Denniston, and welcome back to another episode of the Freedom Formula for Physicians podcast. And in February, we had been graced by Edna Ma, Dr. Edna Ma, who has done so many cool things. We talked about in the last episode how she had been on Survivor, and we talked about what financial freedom meant to her and how she is not paying off her student loans super quickly and is instead trying to acquire assets. Then we ended the conversation with starting to talk about her numbing product, and we just barely touched on the fact that she was going on to Shark Tank. So today we are going to continue the conversation with Edna and learn more about her and this experience. Welcome back, Edna.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, it is great to have you back. It's just so cool, all the different things that you are doing. You're an author. You've been on TV. You've created businesses. And before we started recording this, you told me about a couple other things that you're doing, too, on top of that. So I'm so glad to have you back. Thank you for making the time to be here.
The privilege is mine.
All right. So, Edna, so you come up with this concept of a numbing cream to help women to make everything not as painful as like a local anesthetic, if I remember right. Is that
exactly?
Pretty
exactly.
Good idea?
I think that anybody who works in the ER or works with children and or anesthesia, where you have to place an IV, you numb the skin first with some Emla cream, and it's a topical anesthetic. You keep that skin covered up for half an hour, 45 minutes, and you come back and you do the IV on the child, and the skin is numb. I said, why can't we do that for our beauty products, either for waxing or bikini laser or even semi-permanent makeup or inking, that type of thing? So I just basically went about and created this product, and it started off just like with a Google. I started actually making it in the kitchen, taking some Emla cream from the hospital and making it in my kitchen, and then gradually created a prototype.
So how does that work, like, in your kitchen? Like, what? I'm just imagining you in your kitchen. Like, there's a pot, you know, you have, like, ingredients spread all over the place. What kind of, you don't need to tell us, like, exactly, but, like, was it lots of ingredients? Like, what was your kitchen a mess? You know, what was this like as you were doing this?
So basically, it first of all involved me buying a lot of different existing numbing products on the market. And unfortunately, you have Amazon and Google and everything. So I just purchased whatever I could find online and tried it against my skin with equivalent to a Tegaderm, which is at the hospital, is an adhesive dressing with one side. And the closest thing I can find for it kind of enveloping the bikini area was Saran Wrap, this cling film. So I'd try, and my testing period was a little bit limited because once you get waxed or lasered, your sample area needs to wait for another month before there's another sample that can be tested. So it took a little bit of while for me to test that. So first I tried this cream, then go put my Saran Wrap diaper on and numb up the skin, then go get waxed and compare that formula compared to another one. And finally I came up with a list of kind of ingredients, researched it, spoke to some plastic surgeons, spoke to some dermatologists about other inactive ingredients that can be used inside this cream and keep it OTC at the same time. If you are going to create a product that is requires two active ingredients, you will require a new drug application. And if you keep your formula consistent with the FDA OTC algorithm, algorithm, you don't have to create a new drug product. That's a huge expense, as you can imagine. So if you decided to come up with another acetaminophen and call it Dr. Dave Denniston's acetaminophen, you can certainly do that. You don't have to go through an FDA process or application. And you would just, instead of calling it Tylenol, you would just call it Dr. Dave's acetaminophen. So that's basically what I did. I had a consultant kind of guide me through the maze of the FDA monographs, and we came up with this formula.
Interesting. And so as you were doing that, obviously you're investing money into the product, and then you had your experience on Survivor, which you had mentioned your whole goal was to get onto Shark Tank anyhow. And so you end up hooking up, I think it was with Mark Burnett or whoever during Survivor, and remind us of that process of how you actually got onto Shark Tank from there.
Okay, so I figured since I lived in Los Angeles and you have social media, so I just blasted my friends. I said, I have this, at this point people had known that I had this product out there. We called it Bear Ease. So I said, I have this product. I need to find out how I can get in touch with Mark Burnett. And I didn't hear anything for ages. And all of a sudden I got this message from my friend. I don't know anything about that Shark Tank show because at that time there was only one season that had come out. And he said, but they're casting. If you need to get in touch with Mark Burnett, they're casting right now at this address. Go right now. So literally, I'm like, oh, I got this message. I went there, and then, oh, you're that was fast. And I'm like, hi, here I am. I'm here for the Survivor audition, and I have no idea what the heck I'm doing, right? And they say, and I told them everything they wanted to hear. Are you outdoors? Oh, yes, I'm from Colorado. I love camping. Do you have you watched this? So, of course, everybody's watched that show, and I've maybe seen one or two seasons of it, but that's it. And I just told them everything they wanted to hear. And then boom, 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 Tuesday, by Thursday, I was casted, and I was sitting in front of Mark Burnett. They told me that I had 2 months at first, and then I think something fell apart with the other cast member. And they're like, Ashley, we would love to have you for two weeks from now. I said, no, you don't understand. And this is in front of, like, Jeff Probst, the CBS executives. I'm on their CBS lot. And it's sort of like an interrogation. You have a wall of these television producers, 20 of them, and then you have a seat facing that area, and you have a camera focused right on you, and they're recording everything, and the lights are on you. And they're like, so you said you wanted to be on Survivor. I said, yes, I said that, but I really wanted to talk to you, Mr. Burnett, and I have this numbing product, and they just thought I was on crack or smoking something because they're like, you do realize you're on a Survivor casting call right now, right? I said, yes, I do. I do know that. But, you know, my goal was to get in front of you, and I thought for sure you would say yes as soon as you heard my product idea. And they're like, this girl has got some balls, you know. And I said, oh, we have a product for that, too. You know, it's called Numb Nuts. I made it blue. And I said, you trim your hedges to make your tree look taller. Oh, my God, they loved it. They loved that. And so I'm like, okay, they thought that it was a little bit on the crazy side. Like, not too crazy, but just crazy enough to go on Survivor. And so they pulled me out of casting, and Mark Burnett pulled me aside, and he said, I can see you're a creative person. If you want to raise money for your business, say yes to this opportunity, and you have a 1 in 18 chance of winning $1 million. I said, huh, 1 in 18? Let's do it. 6 weeks out of Survivor Island? No toilet paper, no toothbrush. I had no idea. I had no idea. And I keep saying that because I had seen season one, and season one was like with Richard Hatch when it was everybody, when they got voted off, they came straight home and they went to The Tonight Show or Jay Leno, whoever was at the time. Right. And that time, that was like reality TV. That was like that was the new thing, unscripted television. But now it's like, it was 23 seasons or whatever. It's become more ordinary and not as much publicity. So I took him up on the offer, and literally 2 weeks later, I was on a plane to Samoa, and I did. And I ended up not winning the season, which was fine. But I considered myself actually having done pretty well, having not watched too many seasons, and having not only 2 weeks to prepare. And I was literally on the hospital workforce taking call while trying to prepare for this Survivor thing. And I didn't know how to make a fire. I didn't know any. Seriously, I didn't know anything. And I didn't know the format. I had to study the format of the show. Yep.
Wow. So you get through the show. You're back home, and had to explain this absence to your supervisors. And so, at what point did you get on Shark Tank then? So tell us about what happened after you got home.
So that's a whole different network. And I just went through the normal casting process. So with Survivor, you have to have your episode completely aired and finished, and then you can apply for like another reality show. And Shark Tank is considered a reality show. So at that point, I had applied the normal way. And you just Google Shark Tank contestant casting application, and it'll pull you up to a website, and it'll tell you it'll be something generic like, Shark Tank casting 2019. at yahoo.com or something like that. But it's not like a .abc.com or whatever. It's on a different network. But they use these, it seems like not a legitimate email address, but they frequently change them and they use different servers. So I applied, I put my 200-word essay, and submitted the picture, and then I waited 4 months. I didn't hear anything. I thought for sure they were not interested. And then I got a phone call, like 4 months later. We would like to move you forward in the application process, but this is not guaranteed that you will be selected. Then I didn't hear anything, and then I got a phone call. Please submit a video of you just speaking at the camera. So I submitted a video. I didn't hear anything for weeks, and then said, we're moving you forward in the process. And so at this point, I was assigned two producers, and I had a whole little, they had me write this pitch, and it's very formulaic. I said, I'm going to do a little introduction, and then I'm going to tell them my ask. And the ask is that I want $20,000 for 1% of my company. And then, you know, they just do the equation and say, that means your valuation is blah, blah, blah. And so I wanted to put it at the end of my little pitch. They said, no, you have to put it at the top of your pitch because they'll be waiting for that. That they'll have pen and paper. I said, but I don't want them to be distracted by that number. Like, if they need to hear the numbers, they're going to focus in on the valuation. I said, I want them to, because I really wanted a deal. I wanted them to focus on my product, and then I'll do the ask. They go, no. But so it's definitely very deliberate and very structured, and the producers produce the way it is, even down to what you wear. So so when you did wardrobe check, I showed up in my business suit, just like I did for the Survivor casting call, and I said, I'm here for, you know, a business meeting. I'm here for business. I would not walk into a VC meeting in a lab coat. There's no reason. I would wear a suit. And they're like, no, you've got to put your lab coat on. So I literally had to go find a lab coat. I drove to the nearest medical school, and I bought a lab coat. Because we're anesthesia, we hardly wear a lab coat. I bought a lab coat for the show. And then the next day, I presented it to them. And, you know, they very much deliberately curate the show.
Oh, sure.
And so at that particular year, they had about 70,000 applications, and I think about 1,300 or 1,500 segments that they had recorded.
Oh my gosh.
At that time, my segments eventually did get recorded, and they tell you, just because your segment is recorded, it doesn't mean that your segment will air. We'll tell you 2 weeks in advance when your episode airs, and in the meantime, you have to find this non-disclosure that you can't reveal the outcome of your pitch. Mm-hmm. So everybody knew that I was filming it, and they're like, tell me what happened, why are you still here? You probably got a deal. You're just working till you finish the whatever year out, till the deal finalizes. And so in my situation, I did not get a deal on the show. And actually, that was very disappointing to me at the time, because I thought for sure Laura Dunier, the QVC lady, would find interest in this.
And who were the sharks that were there?
Yes. Okay. So it was season five, and it's funny because that particular year, so it's now becoming more of a mature show. It was Mark Cuban, Robert Kersavec, Laura Dunier, Barbara Corcoran, and Mr. Wonderful, and Kevin O'Leary. So I thought, for sure, great, this is great. There's two women on the panel. They're going to say yes. And I gave a normal valuation. I was preparing for the show. And I prepared for the show by finding every single episode I can find and writing down every single question that they asked them and then coming up with the episode myself, coming up with my response pertaining to my company at the time. And they asked very very similar questions over the – I mean, if you watch two seasons of it, it's more than covers – all the questions that they'll ever ask. And it's sort of like preparing for any boards or exam. You can kind of anticipate which questions, and you can kind of see where people kind of derail themselves or put themselves in a bind in advance. So if you value your company too high, or you have too much self-worth, or you don't show the sharks enough respect, they will just devour you. And the things I kind of forgot going into the show was that ABC is owned by Disney, and it is a family program. So nobody, especially Mark Burnett, Kevin O'Leary, even Lori Grenier, they don't want to be talking about anybody else's pubic hair for the rest of their life. I mean, they're their own brand too, right?
So right.
They don't want to be, so I could, in retrospect, I'm not surprised that they said, no, we're not interested in your brand because of XYZ. They came up with some other excuse, but every shark turned me down. And I was like totally crushed. And for like months leading up to the airing, I was like, I'm stuck. I can't win Survivor. I can't do this. And meanwhile, like, my colleagues are just crushing it out there. And I'm like, I was totally demoralized. But then the episode aired. And people reached out to me. It's like, they like messaged me right away. And they saw that I was the second segment that came on. You know, the first segment was this woman who created vegetable pops. Of course, she gets the deal. Second segment, Edna Ma with her numbing kit. I'm so sorry. Immediately, the message, I'm so sorry, you didn't get a deal. And I'm like, how did you know I didn't get a deal? And he's like, it's formulaic. The first person gets a deal. The second two people don't get a deal. And the last one, they want to end on a happy note, they get a deal. Like, that's the way the show is. I'm like, you know what, you're totally right. That's very interesting. I hadn't thought about it like that. And so I didn't get a deal, but when the episode aired, my emails were bombarded, and I got a lot of offers and had a lot of meetings right afterwards with people willing to help me. And I ended up choosing a company that is a private equity, or not private equity, maybe VC, who had a bunch of other brands and the logistics team to help me with my cream. And I decided to partner with them because it was more strategic rather than just straight growth. Mm-hmm. And I've been with that group until today. And it's about 5 years since that time.
Wow. So that's now getting on a while ago. And so in your particular case, there wasn't a deal that got closed at Shark Tank. With you, do you have any thoughts for someone that wants to get onto the show like you did because they have some sort of medical product that maybe doesn't involve pubic hairs?
Exactly.
That might be a good fit. What advice would you have to them?
I would say definitely apply for the show because frequently they'll have to, and especially if you have something different. So if it's medically related, they particularly like those type of things because I think they're kind of exhausted from cupcakes and food items and that kind of concept. So definitely apply. And they love, and you have to remember that when you are applying for the show, you're applying to attract the producers. The producers are the first gatekeepers, television producers. They are the screening people. You're not trying to say, oh, this is going to be perfect for Mark Cuban. Like, if you're not even there, you're not there yet. You first have to make yourself appealing to the producers and the selection committee. So that means when you submit your initial 200-word essay, make it kind of funny, make it interesting and intriguing, and submit a photo of yourself that is a representative of you with your family, maybe, if you're somebody of a different ethnic background, somebody other than straight Caucasian male, not that there's anything wrong with that, but they are looking for diversity. And so female, anything that people of color, and if you're with your family, definitely show them that with your family and show them that because like you're saying, like I said, this is Disney. This is the Disney Channel that you're pitching to. And then when you move forward finally with your product or the application process for the Shark Tank, I would say when you make a video, it's hard to do this, but look at the camera on your computer screen or the lens. So don't look at the screen because when the person watches the video, they'll see that your eyes are not meeting theirs. And you want to kind of meet the producer's eyes. So try to train yourself when you're doing the video pitch to look at that little black hole on your camera. That will help. I feel like you connect to the producer more easily. Those are the two main things that I had found. Once you've gotten selected for the show and you're moving forward and you're on that oriental rug, I would say, okay, sorry, let me back up a little bit. When you're preparing for the show, talk out loud. Like, say, give your pitch many, many times. Mm-hmm. And you only get one go at it. They adjust, they open the doors to that long hallway, and you're walking down the hallway. There's no music. You're just there in silence. And you walk down there, and they have a piece of X on that tape. And then you have to stand there for a minute. And you're looking at this. They're adjusting all the lights in the cameras for this whole minute. and you're looking at the sharks and you're like grinning because you're not supposed to say anything for this full minute or so, and they're adjusting to the camera so they're at your eye level and you only get one chance at this. So you're standing there staring at them, they're staring at you, you're feeling so nervous, and the camera, you see the producers off to your left and the television wall of cameras and the television screens. And you have to have practiced everything. And that particular 1 minute, that 1 minute of a stare down, they're staring at you, staring at them, and you're just like, everybody knows, you just have to, you can't talk until some guy yells off from the side, go ahead, and then you give your pitch. But before then, you should be prepared. Like, practice your pitch a million times. Know it in your sleep. This is like the oral boards when for anesthesia board certification. And I did that a million times. I would just pitch it to myself in my car, answer the questions, and try to say it with a few verbal pauses. There's one guy that I've gotten to know. He actually forgot his pitch, and it was became really funny. And so that's what I remembered him as. When I finally met him, I'm like, oh, yeah, you're the guy who forgot your pitch. And so he's the nicest guy, but he's just extremely nervous. So I would say practice your pitch, practice your answers, and go in with a certain strategy. So in my situation, I would say the majority of audience viewers don't realize that when you're watching the show, the handshake that the shark and the entrepreneur make at the end of the deal, it's just a good faith gesture. So the deal has not finalized. Their due diligence process, the due diligence process starts immediately afterwards. And I've heard different things from different people. One family that I've gotten to know over the course of the years is the Lolly Cup family. That's the sippy cup with the weighted bottom, so the tip goes to the bottom of the fluid, so it doesn't, you know, when the child lifts the cup up, the straw's not in the air, it goes to the bottom of the fluid. They actually closed the deal with Mark Cuban, and they actually closed. And their situation is a little bit more rare, but I would probably say approximately 30% of the handshake deals end up with a closed final deal. And that family has grown their business very successfully and actually have regular phone calls, like once a week or so, with Mark Cuban. They have his cell phone number programmed into their telephones. I would say the majority of them don't end up in a final deal. And you, as an entrepreneur, have the chance to back out from the deal as well. You can say that you're under emotional and psychological duress, and you can say, I agree to that, but it wasn't clear-headed at the time. Or the sharks can say, you know, you embellished your details on your returns, so I'm going to change the terms of my deal. I want 90% of your company in order for you to move forward. And it's really the shark's actual money, so they have to be cautious about how they invest. And, of course, it's a representative of their brand. So I would say that for me, like, I didn't get a deal. So when I walked off that carpet, I was in shambles. I was crying. And that's why there's not a little segment of me like, I'll show those sharks. I'm going to blow it out of the water. No, I was like out in the back just like in shambles, just crying. And so I was like, I don't understand why they didn't want to help me. And so I have another friend who I've gotten to know. Her name is Shelley. She created the poncho towel that is basically a towel with a hole, or a child can wear it like a sandwich board, and so they can change in and out of their bathing suits underneath this towel. And I think that her towel is called No Show Towel. And she got a deal on the show. Lori wrote her a check for $10,000 and handed it to her and said, we're going to knock this out of the park. We're going to get a licensing deal. This is going to be in every single theme park license in the country. So now this woman and I are on sort of a speaking circuit together about what different strategies on Shark Tank. So her deal never went through. She got one purchase order from like Disneyland, I think, and then Lori decided, or this is the way she shares it. And she's very open about it. So everything I'm saying, she speaks about it on her own blog, and she's spoken about it in public forum. So I'm not disclosing any secret conversations that she shared privately with me. So Lori decided not to go with her on the deal. And so that $10,000 check, she keeps it in her pocket. And whenever she goes to these speaking events with me, she pulls it out. She says, I was called by Lori's team the very next day not to cash that check because it wasn't good. It was for TV. And so fast forward 6 years later, she needs money. She can't fulfill these purchase orders. She ends up closing her business. because that deal with Shark Tank didn't go forward. So, like, in my case, every time my episode is aired, I get a few emails like, are you still looking for money? I noticed that you didn't get any money. And so people are, if that's your strategy, go into Shark Tank not to raise money. I would get attention, not to raise money. There's something like 10 million people watching it, and investors too. So she ended up appearing as though she got money, but not getting an investment. And so now her company's basically closed. And I would say that that's probably not, you know, she's very optimistic about it. She's like, it has a different message for me. And so she's actually turned that into a great opportunity. It's like, caused her to build strength in her own personal life. One last story. I'm sure you've seen, this is Scott Jordan. He's hilarious. He was the entrepreneur who owned Scotty Vest, the travel wear with all the pockets that's integrated with the electronics. I'm not sure if you've ever seen his products in SkyMall. So he apparently was not very nice to the shark. And he's like, well, you know what? Everybody was out. He's like, so everybody's out. Okay, you know what? You guys are not out. I'm getting you out. You're out. And he points to Mark Cuban. You're out, and you're out. And he's pointing his fingers at all the sharks down the line, and he storms off. And everybody is just like, oh, God, he's so mean. And so that guy just comes off. And, of course, the television producers love that because he's controversial. So anyway, so you have to keep in mind, as an applicant, contestant, that's what they call you, you have to go through two hurdles. One is the producer hurdle and the application process to that and become appealing for television. And number two is to become appealing if you really want money and a different kind of strategy when you're finally standing on that oriental carpet.
Interesting. Well, thank you so much for sharing. I think that's really, really interesting stuff for anyone that wants to move forward. Great advice there.
Yeah, and so, feel free to email me, too, if anybody has any further questions about stuff. And they just have open casting pretty much all year round. I mean, just submit. But if you have any specific questions, feel free to ask me. I'm happy to email you my list of questions that they've asked the previous four seasons.
Well, it sounds like your experience is that you don't expect an answer in a week. It might be months, and then it might be months after that as they deal with their pool of potential applicants.
Well, let's take a moment for a quick commercial break. Well, my friends, if you are sitting here confused by all these tax changes, wondering how the heck does this impact me? I mentioned in January, the beginning of this year, that I am going to make available to you my calculator showing all the different scenarios laid out on how this whole thing works. So for this month and the next one, if you text all one word, less taxes, LESSTAXES, all one word, less taxes, to 44222, you can grab that calculator right now. Go ahead and text less taxes, all one word, LESSTAXES, to 44222. And if you're interested in wanting to get the tax reduction prescription, the newest version of it, definitely text there as well, because that will give you early access to the next version of the tax reduction prescription. Again, text less taxes, all one word, LESSTAXES, to 44222. And now, back to the show.
So here's what I'd like to know, Edna. So you didn't get a deal with the sharks, but you got a deal with a VC company or some sort of private investor. So when you did that, I'm sure it's private information, so I don't want to dig too much into it, but how much control did you have over the product and the company? You know, when someone is investing money into your business, and I guess as well as why have someone invest? What was the purpose of doing that you hope that they were going to do for you by partnering together?
So for me, it was not so much the money and capital, because, you know, I had some reserves, and being a physician, I feel like we have a little bit more flexibility in your disposable income, and this was my disposable income because there's no guarantee for returns. So I was looking for more of a strategic partner who can help me with the logistics, because I was getting kind of overwhelmed at this this point. We were gaining traction. We had made it into several half a dozen of these glossy magazines, the Cosmo and Vogue and all those glossy beauty magazines. So gaining traction in the distribution, and I just couldn't juggle dealing with the logistics of answering emails or shipping out products. And I had a warehouse helping me with this, but they'd have their own problems sometimes. And so they'd ask specific questions. How is this for, what's your wholesale pricing for this? And what's your wholesale pricing for that? What's your distributor pricing? And it's like, I'm going to be going into this craniotomy for 6 hours. Can you just deal with that? You know, it's like, you don't have the much time to kind of be dealing with all that. So I needed to really get somebody with a strategic partner who had a dedicated team for that. And I was willing to give up some control and potential gains for that in order to have more, I don't want to say freedom, but just have time to manage what's the higher priority.
So did you end up still having an active hand in the business, over the last 5 years?
I did.
So this is all transpired.
So for them, it was a strategic move, too, because they had several other businesses and other products out there. And so my product was synergistic with theirs. They had a product that is a non-pharmacologic hemorrhoid device. And so my goal was, with that partnership for them, it was strategic in that I was going to create a doctor-formulated derivative of this numbing cream. So it would be used in combination with the product that they already had in their portfolio. So kind of it was a bit of a win-win.
And as I'm just thinking about this whole journey, all this time that you've spent, were you still doing medicine full-time? Did you reduce your hours? I mean, you have a family now, too. I mean, in those those years, you've had kids, too, right?
Yes, that's right. So I had a little, when my segment finally aired, I mentioned my son, who was about a year old. And so I was probably doing medicine about 80%, at least five days a week, and at least 8 hours a day. But, you maximize your time. You get up a couple hours, like at least an hour early, and you maybe spend another hour before you pick up your kid from daycare or preschool or whatever, and you just squeeze every minute out and outsource whatever things you don't need to do to have that somebody else to do it. So you just have to really prioritize your time. And you also have, get some help, have my in-laws help, and my husband helping. And so it's just to have that network of people. And again, just like having this logistics team, their warehouse, helping pull and fill orders, answer some of the questions. You have just one account manager. You explain it to her. And she was my account manager for several years, so she had her own kids. But anyway, like you just explain it one time. This person has like, okay, here's the files that I send out. I only have a couple products. So it was relatively straightforward. But just having a logistics team, and just that is the hugest thing. And like, if you wanted to ship something to Target, for example, we were on the discussing with Target how to get there. They have to have your product has to be like packaged in a way that is compliant with their receiving department, and that stuff like it goes into a whole level of logistics. I can't even explain on this podcast because where the sticker sits on the pallet, it matters to how they receive the inventory. And I just didn't have the time to learn all these specifics about that.
Interesting. So you're now to the point you're working with them, and if you don't mind sharing, I'd love to know, like, was this something like instantly profitable? Were you personally having to put more money into the product, to further develop it and have more inventory? What has that been like?
So I didn't have to put any more money with once the partner came in. They were able to help cash flow that and manage that because now I don't have a logistics team to pay for. I don't have to pay for the shipping costs and all that because they have high volume pricing for that. They have an account manager who's dedicated not just to my brand but to a handful of other brands. They already have accounts with companies like Kohl's and
Target.
Exactly. They have those kind of relationships and like the Walmart equivalent in Europe and stuff like that. So I guess So they have those things. I was just basically one more cog in their machine, and it was just going forward with or without me. And so it made it a lot easier to kind of manage my time and the logistics of that.
And has it been profitable, you know, these last few years?
I would say the last few years that have been profitable. I wouldn't say it's hugely profitable, because I will say that it has. I've come into a couple road bumps, including a cyber attack on my website. Oh. And and that was a little bit bumpy. And then there was some changes on their side of their business. And so that has, just in the last year, it has tapered off. But prior to that, it was sort of the first four years. This is last year, so 2007 has been a little bit tighter. But prior to that, it was been doing very well.
Like a six-figure business or a five-figure business?
No. Something like $40,000 a year.
Well, that's still substantial. I mean, that's...
So it's not a crazy amount. But
got
just
it.
Like, you know, you just try to... sort of my sort of philosophy is like, try to... I still do this, but you work for money, and then you let money work for you. And
right.
Money doesn't sleep. I think that's from Wall Street, isn't it? That movie, Wall Street.
Well, it sounds like that at least the last few years, that maybe you weren't having to invest as much time into it. So in a sense,
yes.
Reading that right?
Yes, exactly. So there's a huge opportunity cost with me having not to focus on that. Because instead of focusing on this, that makes like $4 a profit per kit, I'm doing my anesthesia, which yields a higher percentage per hourly rate. Kind of thinking like a lawyer, I guess, in that regard. But like I can kind of focus that, and then my team is focusing on getting the volume up if I'm only making $4 a kit, which was originally kind of the situation. I was making about something like $4 or $5 a kit. I started after my call days. I would just go to the local beauty salons, and I'd be like, here's my product, here I am. And they're very interested. And locally, we had gained a lot of traction. But I maybe will do a song and dance for an hour's pitch with a retailer. And, of course,
right.
It took me about an hour to get there, an hour to get back. And that was easily 3 hours for me to net a profit of maybe $25, $50 per order. Then that became a little bit challenging. Eventually, before I got Shark Tank, I retained a sort of a sales team that they worked on commission, and they would they had a Rolodex. I don't know if people use that anymore. Probably not. They had a Rolodex of contacts. They had a contact list of people who bought niche beauty products. So not everybody wants to buy, you know, Estee Lauder or Revlon. I guess they're kind of the same thing, but they're interested in sort of indie products, and that's kind of where my product was being represented by a group of salespeople. So I had some representation internationally.
Well, I have to imagine, like we had before last year, one of the things I did was bought an online business, and we talked about Empire Flippers, and I have to imagine that when your model is based upon big box retailers, you know, that a lot of them are trying to squeeze margins and make things more profitable for them, that there's a huge shift, of course, to Amazon. Is that something that maybe impacted your business, like you were talking about? This last year wasn't as strong because maybe some of these seas of changes and waves of changes that are coming across retail.
So this is actually happening to some of my friends. So one of the strategies was to shift from shelf space, a retail brick and mortar, to online only. Because you can imagine, it's like it costs a lot more to keep your product in a brick and mortar shelf. And a lot of places, even places like Sephora and Target, you only have, if you're not moving the product, you either have to pay for rental space for your product to be on the shelf. Or especially on the end caps. If you're on the end caps, for sure, you're going to have to pay extra premium. If you're not moving product out of there, they're getting to get you out of there. And so in keeping it in the warehouse and having one guy pull things off a shelf or even a robot or whatever and pack it, it's a lot cheaper. Because they've already, when they have it in a warehouse, they pull off the shelf, they've already guaranteed a sale. So that is already reducing your cost. And you see your margins on that, like 80% versus like less than 10%, like 20% sometimes. So your margins are much better when you're selling online. So in the last couple of years, we've been shifting like almost everything online. The other thing I would say is like you have to be careful with what's your competition. So my girlfriend, who I've gotten to know very well, when she started 10, 15 years ago, these sheet masks, they're like the made of paper or thick kind of paper, but it's saturated with beauty serum. They're like lining, brightening, moisturizing, hydrating. I'm sure you've seen them. And you wear on your face, and it's like bathes your face in this serum. And she was selling it at $5-$6 a sheet, premium indie product. So now it's like in the last 4 or 5 years, Asian beauty, especially Korean beauty products, is like gaining traction in the market. And so she was in Sephora on the shelf on the brick and mortar, like thousands of Sephora stores. Next thing you know, Sephora sees that this is a hot product. They make their own. So now she's back online. She's on Sephora.com only. And so that's sort of the problem. When you get such a successful product, there's nothing stopping a Sephora or like even CVS. CVS has their own called Beauty 360, creating their own private label of the exact same thing that you're selling. Plus, they don't have to pay for that shelf space or any rental space. So that's kind of what happened to my friend who has that very successful business.
So how is that impacting you then? You know, like
nothing. It doesn't for me. That it has not affected me, except only for the fact that my retail presence in terms of shelf space is almost none. It's all web presence, and I would say that is probably the same pattern or business approach that most products and retailers are using this day. And I'm sure you've heard these people going to Walmart, buying stuff and selling it on Amazon.
Yes, I tried that myself. It was not as much fun as I hoped it would be.
It takes a lot because you have to build up your seller credibility online. And so people will be, and there's a whole algorithm on how to make your product appear at the top of their search engines too.
Well, it was even just like, it was actually Amazon fees that killed it for me.
They have chargebacks too. Yeah, they have chargebacks for sure. So like a brick and mortar store, Bed Bath Beyond, Target, for sure, if your product's not moving, they have to send it back to you. Forget it. Like your margins are going to be gone. You're not going to make any money on that.
Wow. Isn't that something? So I want to shift the conversation once again to we had been talking earlier before we talked that not only are you an author with your books, the children's book is the most recent thing. You don't only have this business, but you also own some real estate. So I would love to hear, Edna, and you're a physician, and you're working 80%. And you have kids and a husband. So I would love to hear from you, and this is something I think about too, is when is enough enough, and when are we spread too thin? Like in my case, you know, I have my day job, I have the online business, I have this podcast, and I have now the land business, right? So I'm doing the plate spinning exercise of, you know, getting one plate going and getting that turning around while balancing that, then getting another one going, and then that one's slowing down, so I have to spin that plate again.
So I have that same dance going.
So how do you think about that? Like when is too many income streams too hard to manage? Like how are you thinking about that issue?
I would say that it obviously depends on the individual's tolerance for that, because I know that I have some friends who don't have they get stressed out about little things that would not stress me out. And I would say that I have a lot of these things sort of on cruise control at this point. You know, we have your property managers, somebody you trust and have a good relationship with managing the property, and you have a little bit of economies of scales. So where we purchase our properties, we have a handful of friends who also invest in that same area. So it'd be like, okay, it's your turn, so-and-so, to go check out the properties. And that person will check out all the properties for their handful of friends. And it's like, okay, now it's so-and-so's turn. And my husband will help do it. And they just find it like it's a boys' weekend in Texas or whatever. They actually enjoy it. So I feel like I kind of spread out that responsibility. And it's not something that we have to do all the time. And now, especially with the internet and people taking pictures, you can just email your property manager. They can send pictures over, and and you have some team, some friends that you trust on the ground, and you can just drive over and check it out to make sure that it is indeed representative of what your property manager told you. So those are like some checks and balances. In terms of the book, I would say, for me, it seems very different. The book seems very different in some ways than the product that I created. The product that I created required a minimum purchase order of 10,000 pieces if you want to manufacture in China from almost anything. And now Alibaba is available. Yeah, 10,000. That's usually the MOQ or minimum order quantity. So the book that I created, it's like practically nothing. I just created this concept, this idea, and it just, again, like I had mentioned in our last interview, I was just inspired by my son's friendship with his one of his classmates. And I created this concept, and I wrote this book out, and I thought it was just kind of the itch that I had to scratch more than anything. I put it down, found an editor, and the books are only printed on demand. So you just order on Amazon, and it says, it'll say on Amazon, only 5 copies remaining. That's just a marketing strategy. It's a print on demand. I guess they have these color copiers. You order one, they push a button, and one comes out, and it goes off into the mail. I don't have to manage any inventory, so there's no upfront capital for this at all, other than what you pay your editor or your illustrator or any marketing fees. So to me, that's very different than having to purchase inventory of 10,000 pieces and then storing it and logistics of that. Like, now this platform, and especially access to Alibaba and these manufacturers in China, it's a totally different ballgame than compared to over 10 years ago when I started the product.
So at this particular point, like, as you look at your focus going forward, do you imagine starting another business, acquiring more real estate? You know, how do you think you're going to try and create more income streams for yourself? Because it sounds like from what you're saying that you have more capacity with doing this with your husband and with friends.
You're so funny. You're more funny than you realize, I think. For me, this is my pie in the sky dream. So I actually have this children's book. It's actually a series. I've already written 3 of them, and I'm hoping to create like a series like Dora the Explorer meets Rick Steves.
Oh, awesome.
So it's like Dora Explorer. She's like speaks mostly English, but every once in a while she'll insert a Spanish word in there. And then I kind of Rick Steves like going to different countries. Like, so I have this several other ideas kind of floating around my brain, like how to kind of introduce this language immersion or language in the context of also traveling. So I would say I would love to see that as an animated series. So the way I've kind of approached this is that anybody who asks me about that, I'm like, oh yeah, I'm trying to create an animated series. Hook me up with whoever you might know. I kind of approach it jokingly, but not really at the same time. So again, I'm just kind of just tapping out any kind of resources that I might have to anybody who might have any contacts at any production studios. So I think that would kind of be my next pie in the sky dream, if you will.
That's awesome. Very cool. And so it sounds like you're just going to kind of let the one business kind of just ride for a little while, that you start out with the numbing cream, and you're going to have the real estate that you're acquiring bit by bit. And do you have like a particular goal, you know, that you say, okay, I want to achieve financial freedom in like 5 or 10 years? Or do you just like love working and you just love this stuff? It's like, yeah, I just keep on going at this forever.
I do. I actually really do love it. I've been fortunate enough to kind of be in my anesthesia practice where I'm busy enough where people kind of, oh, I'd like to do this case, I'd like to do that case. I'm like, okay, sure. And there's nothing for you today because the schedule's light. Okay, I'll come off the schedule. It's no big deal. I have like plenty of other things to do. So but I really like going to work with these people who are so nice, and it's engaging to see these your friends essentially, because you see they have their surgical assignment day on Monday. That every Monday you see them, you hear about their family. I really do like doing anesthesia. And with this other stuff, I feel like, and Tony Robbins says this, if you're not growing, you're dying as a person. And I feel like this creative outlet, it allows me to grow with my family. So I feel like the story is kind of inspired by my children, and it's allowing me to grow and learn with them. And I don't feel like it's preventing me from spending time with them. And I would say the last thing, like I think I might have mentioned to you, it's sort of more like an itch. And when I that I created this product, why did I create the numbing cream product, is because like everybody, like physicians are all problem solvers, right? So I saw a problem, and I wanted to solve that problem. And about almost 20 years at this point, and I'm going to just, I misrepresented myself in the last interview when I said I had FOMO, fear of missing out. That's why I created the product. And I'll kind of illustrate by an example. So about 20 years ago, I was living in Colorado, and I was living at the top, at the fifth floor of our apartment building. And I had a small little dog that I had to let out several times a day. And it was, of course, it would snow, and it was awful weather, and I didn't want to take her out every time in the morning, middle of the night, all that type of thing. So I had took a couple logs of sod in the sometime. I put them up on my balcony with a layer of plastic and lined the two rolls of sod on my balcony. And the next time she voided and emptied out her bladder, I collected that grass and I put it up on that sod. And she would use it. She would use that sod. And now I didn't have to go. My problem was solved. I didn't have to go out in the middle of the night or in the snow. She would just pee on that grass. And then every summer I would just change it. Fast forward 10 years, I saw that product sold for $250. A little plastic hydrant, plastic grass, a plastic sod. I'm like, I had that idea. But you know what the difference between that person, between me and that person who created that product? One person took action and the other person did not take action. Yeah. And I was the person who didn't take action. And I'm like, you know what? I have this knowledge of this numbing idea, numbing of the skin for IVs, and every physician does that if they work with children. I better take some action before somebody else does. And so that's what I meant by FOMO, because if I didn't take action, that was the only thing. Like this, now this product lives in probably every single pet store. Fake grass with a little fire hydrant, and now even fake urine, like urine smells, it attracts the dogs to go to that spot. And I didn't want that opportunity to pass me by, basically.
Well, and I would say in my study of successful individuals, financially successful individuals, certainly a commonality is taking action. And you often hear, I'm going to jump off the plane and figure out how to open the parachute. And sometimes that means, you know, you might have some malfunctions along the way, but somehow, some way, the universe kind of opens up and you end up having some form of success. And maybe you don't fall, die to your death, but you end up getting injured along the way, and you learn from those mistakes. And I think what I would encourage everyone to take away from this interview, as well as the last one, is Edna is an action taker. She's not afraid to take risk. And she might be certainly have some fear around it, right, to a degree. I'm sure not every moment has come without some form of trepidation, but you fought through that. And you did it. And for me, in this world where so many physicians are W-2 employees, employed by a hospital, which is a wonderful and great place, you know, if you want to be a multi-millionaire, following Edna's example of taking risk and doing different things while still doing your regular job, I think is just a wonderful example of how to go about that.
Thank you. That's very kind words from you. Thank you.
You're welcome. You're welcome. And Edna, I'd like to wrap up our conversation for today, and I'd love to know, what are any final thoughts that you'd like to leave with us?
I would say that whoever's listening to this and has an idea, just take action. What I have done is nothing special. And if you don't take action, somebody else will, like I have learned myself. And there's nothing, if the process is, it's up and down for sure, because it's not as straightforward as going to medical school. And I would just say, get ready for that, but don't live with the possibility of having regret. That's what I would say.
Don't live without regrets, my friends. There you go. And then if people want to check you out, they want to follow what you're doing, where's the best place for them to connect with you?
I just updated my website, but it's just edna.ma.com. And then they have the social media feeds like Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, all that silliness.
Bam, there you go. So that's edna.ma.com.
Exactly.
Perfect. Well, there you go, my friends. Another podcast in the books. I've really enjoyed the conversation with Edna. I hope you did, too. I think there's so many great things for you to learn from, whether you want to get on the Shark Tank or not, just about the steps she took, the preparation, the time, the dedication and research that Edna did. And now she has these multiple streams of income, and certainly it hasn't come without some fear along the way. It hasn't come without some challenges, but she's fought through it and continuing to grow and learn. And I would love to hear from you too. If you're someone that's doing interesting things like Edna, please reach out to me, dave@drfreedompodcast.com. For the Freedom Formula for Physicians podcast, this is Dave Denniston. Make sure to reach out anytime. Remember, my friends, slash your debt, slash your taxes, and live a liberated lifestyle. Have a good one.
Well, there was the show. Hope you loved it. And of course, we want to make sure to remember that right now is the time. If you are confused about this tax stuff, you want the latest copy of the tax reduction prescription and that calculator I was talking about in January. There's no better time to grab that than right now. Text less taxes, LESSTAXES, to 44222. Again, that's all one word, less taxes, LESSTAXES. Thank you again so much for listening. Blessings to you. Have a good one.